Eberhard Wolf is one of the experts that the server side follows on Twitter. A software engineer with going on 20 years worth of experience. You may have read one of his books on Spring or continuous delivery or microservices, or you may have seen him speaking on one of those topics at a conference in North America or Europe. We noticed he's got a new book out, A Practical Guide to Continuous Delivery, so we scheduled an interview, and the first question was, what is the current state of continuous integration and continuous delivery?
I'd say that continuous integration is nowadays a commodity up to the point where people actually forgot that what it actually means, and they start to use continuous integration service just to do regular compiles. Well, in fact, they are doing feature branches, and that way they postpone the integration. So what I'm trying to say is, if I look at development nowadays, oftentimes people are actually doing feature branches, and you know that means that a team might be doing something for quite a long time, not integrating with the other ones, and that way they actually sort of miss the original point about continuous integration. So I think that's the status that we are in, that people actually forgot about the original ideas behind it and are probably rediscovering them, I guess.
So when you encounter clients using this feature branch approach, what do you tell them and how do you go about correcting them?
So, you know, but the first thing that I'm trying to tell them is if you don't have a problem, then don't fix it. So if it works for them, that's fine. And you know, feature branches are actually a fine way of doing it. If they do have problems, however, so, you know, if they have problems with integrating back into the main branch, as you said, then I would set up some additional measures like doing regular integrations or maybe even changing it altogether so that, you know, you just have the master branch and you all work on trunk and you do it that way. I think, by the way, continuous delivery changes the whole thing a little bit because usually it means that the master branch is special anyway because it's the one that goes into production. So, you know, that even if you do feature branches and you branch them off, they are different from the master branch because they are usually not going into production. And that means that I would argue through continuous delivery is probably it's not the best idea to combine it with feature branches.
Now, are there any software tools that you recommend for organizations that are going to take a continuous delivery type of approach to DevOps? Or are you one of those advocates that falls into that camp that says tooling is one of the last things you talk about when you go down this path?
Concourse is an interesting tool because it does everything on Docker. And actually, a colleague of mine is quite an advocate of that. So I found that interesting. Generally speaking, I would argue, in particular, if you talk about continuous delivery and if you look at the book, it's actually all about testing. So in the book, I talk about, you know, unit tests and acceptance tests and performance testing and all these kinds of things. And usually when you know, if I go to a customer and I need to consult them concerning continuous delivery and also probably microservices, like the major part, the first thing that I talk to them talk about is what is it really that keeps you from doing much more frequent releases? And usually there is some manual sign-off, some manual acceptance testing. And I think that is something that is often forgotten. So, you know, just having a Jenkins and just having a deployment pipeline and doing deployment automation, I think that's not the key challenge. The key challenge is to go into production without manual sign-off.
Now, we're all familiar with unit tests and testing our business logic and even to a certain extent integration testing. But what about testing the UI? I mean, how can we do changes to a user interface, to the way that a person interacts with our tool, and actually test that and validating that? Aren't there some serious challenges in terms of automating UI testing?
I would tend to agree that if you talk about UI testing and concerning, you know, look and feel and these kinds of things, that's hard to automate and probably even impossible. Having said that, what I usually see in customers is that they rely on UI. They are doing UI testing, but in fact, what they are really doing is acceptance testing. So, you know, it's not about does the UI work properly, and it's also not about whether the UI looks nice. If they do UI, automated UI testing, it's usually about does the system do what it's supposed to do, which in my opinion is acceptance testing. And I think that's a problem, and the road that usually leads there is that that's what testers do, right? They start the application, they take a look at the UI, they do stuff in the UI, they validate that the results are correct, and they automate that. So you have a UI test, which is in fact really an acceptance test. And I think that's bad because that way you get fragile tests, because if you do a minor tweak to the UI, it breaks your test, even though the business logic might still be the same. And also those tests tend to be slow. So slow and even sometimes unreliable. So if you ask me about, you know, the main challenge concerning UI tests, I would argue that the main challenge is that they become acceptance tests, and you should look at different ways of doing testing in that regard. And, you know, you should do proper acceptance testing using other tools. And that is why I really wanted to include that chapter about JBehave and behavior-driven design, because I think it's key to understand how to do proper automated acceptance testing and how to try to avoid manual sign-offs from the customer.
Now, you clearly have an issue with manual sign-offs, but what about exploratory testing? I believe you talk about it in your book. What's the role of exploratory testing and the manual aspect of exploratory testing?
I think it's fine to do manual testing. I mean, that's basically what exploratory testing is about, to have a manual look about at specific parts of the application that might be, I don't know, something that you want to have a closer look because they usually cause some problems or something like that. So I would argue it is something to sort of a tool where you can have a specific focus on specific areas of the application that are somehow a problem, you know, from a performance perspective, from a business logic perspective. However, I think that it's important to note that it's not a sign off, right? It's more like we look at that, we try to figure out what the problems are in this area, but we don't do a manual sign-off or a test that leads to a manual sign-off in these specific areas. So I think that's how it fits in. It should be something that is going on, you know, to fix problems in specific areas, but it should not be a blocker in the continuous delivery pipeline, which it would clearly be if it was a sign-off.
Now, there's no denying the containerization trend, and I'm seeing more and more clients being pressured into using Docker and integrating Docker and containers into their architecture. How has containerization and tools like Docker changed the way that continuous integration and continuous delivery is done?
Yeah, I think you are pointing at a very important point that, in fact, you, given that there is Docker, it allows different ways of doing integration and continuous integration service and so on. And I would agree that there will probably be a new generation of tools. I believe Concurse is one of the tools, as I already mentioned. And so I think that is an interesting point to really rethink continuous integration, to make the continuous integration server aware of Docker containers, to make the continuous integration server itself run in Docker containers, and also to obviously create Docker containers. And I believe that, or shall I put it, Jenkins is not the greatest tool anyway, right? So I think for that reason, the additional pressure that you mentioned from the move towards Docker, I sort of welcome it because I'm looking forward to a new generation of CI tools.
So what are the things that you would like to see in the next generation of continuous integration and continuous delivery tools?
A more rigid isolation of the different builds of the different projects, and also I would say that it should. I mean, if you look at Jenkins, I would argue that it has been built with the idea of setting up your continuous integration platform, your continuous integration pipeline in the tool itself, in the web UI. Of course, that has changed now because there are now job description languages, but I would argue that ideally a modern continuous integration tool should be code-based anyway. So you know that there's a job description for the continuous integration pipeline from the very beginning, and it should be built with that in mind. So I think those are the points. What I do like about Jenkins, of course, is the huge ecosystem and all the plugins that you have, which again are sort of an issue because it means that, you know, no Jenkins server looks like the other one, and it's hard to get all those plugins to work together. So that's another shortcoming probably, but you know, it's a trade-off because if it was for all those plugins, Jenkins would be much less valuable.
So I'm assuming that you believe that adopting a DevOps culture is important to making continuous integration and continuous delivery work.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I believe DevOps is all about development and operations working together, which is to say that it's not about an organizational change. So I think it's not so important to have Dev and Ops report into the same managers. What I do think is important is that both share, you know, responsibility for the application, and that there is no finger pointing, but true collaboration. So I think that's like the key point. And of course, if you do change the organization, then that might be beneficial for such collaboration. I think continuous delivery is one way or one thing that you can achieve more easily if you do DevOps. That is to say, if I look at a continuous delivery pipeline, at one point it's about deploying stuff into production, which is usually an operations thing. And on the other hand, at the start of the pipeline, you know, just doing the compilation and building the software and unit testing and so on, that's more a dev thing. So if you have the whole pipeline, you can only build it if you have a DevOps organization. So I would say that continuous delivery is one thing that you can enable by having a DevOps organization. That's sort of how it fits together, in my opinion.
Now, one of the reasons we got together today was so we could talk about your latest book, A Practical Guide to Continuous Delivery. What is it that you wanted to achieve by writing this book, and what is the takeaway that readers will have once they finish reading it?
So I think what I want to achieve with my book, and that is actually something that is that also sets it apart from I guess from the original continuous delivery book, it is a practical introduction. So I actually do talk about specific tools. I give advices about how to use them. I have some examples how to use the tools, and people can learn from that and build their own experiments. So that's basically how it works, in my opinion.
Now, if that 15-minute conversation doesn't convince you that Eberhard Wolf knows what he's talking about, I don't know what will. I strongly suggest that you, like the server side, follow him on Twitter. That's @ewolf, that's with two Fs. And more importantly, go pick up his book, A Practical Guide to Continuous Delivery. I know you'll enjoy it.